This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone, and this third part of our episode on tailored messaging is even slimier than the second.
A few facts. One, the newspaper business is in the toilet, decimating local journalism and putting thousands of reporters on the street. Two, digital tools and the internet make it easy to create genuine-looking forgeries of actual documents, even entire bogus news outlets. And three, bad actors of all stripes are seizing the opportunities afforded by technology to poison the information well with propaganda, psyops, and lies, such as Russia's infamous Internet Research Agency, which contaminated our 2016 election, as one of the culprits explained on the CBC.
I figured out early that the main goal was to create a picture of the world on the internet that mirrored what was being shown on Russian television.
All of the above is how Laura Walters wound up as a stooge for the Russians.
I felt pretty stupid. I felt pretty embarrassed. And I just thought, oh my gosh, how did I not pick this up? I'm usually the person who's reporting on these things. I'm usually the person who's spotting these things.
The specific thing the London-based New Zealand journalist didn't spot was that the apparent do-gooder publication that had solicited her work, called Peace Data, was a phony site set up by that same Internet Research Agency. This time, the Russians covertly paid legitimate Western journalists for articles to establish a veneer of respectability for its disinformation.
A person calling themselves Alice Schultz messaged me on LinkedIn and said, hey, we see you've written about issues like human rights and global social issues and geopolitical issues in the past. And we've just started up a brand new not-for-profit organization. We're trying to get some good content on our new website, and we're looking to publish the type of stuff you've been writing about. Would you be interested in writing something for us?
So she submitted a story that, as we shall see shortly, was the Hope Diamond of dark irony. But for now, let's just observe that Laura Walters is by no means alone. As reported over the past year by Reuters, Columbia Journalism Review, Deseret News, Lansing State Journal, and most recently the New York Times, various political actors have exploited the tools of digital technology and the financial hardship of struggling journalists to develop sophisticated propaganda operations fronted by innumerable unwitting accomplices. And they are everywhere.
Over 1,200 local news sites in all 50 states in the run-up to the 2020 election. That's a problem.
That was Christiane Amanpour. This political grift is an ugly evolution of the so-called content farm, which emerged about a decade ago to provide dirt-cheap content for budget-strapped news organizations. They scraped official data online, automated basic financial reporting, copied press releases, and paid freelancers piecework to mass-produce what looked like journalism, but was mainly just filler. Such content came to be known by the same name applied to the dubious meat-like product, also used as filler.
Gerald Zernstein grinds his own hamburger these days. Why? Because this former USDA scientist, now whistleblower, knows that 70% of the ground beef we buy at the supermarket contains something he calls pink slime.
Cheap and filling, yes, and also kind of nauseating.
You know, it's hard to come by a good business model in local news nowadays.
Priyanjana Bengani is a senior research fellow at Columbia Journalism School's Tau Center for Digital Journalism, who has written extensively on the slime beat and its capacity for dressing up readily available information as news.
They use automated techniques to just flood the pipelines with content which people may or may not care about.
Sometimes, though, the human touch is required.
If there was something that needed to be reported or that needed to have a little bit more of a human element, those stories would then be outsourced to the Philippines, where they could pay people very little money to either conjure up bylines or conjure up quotes.
In her mention of the Philippines, she refers particularly to a content farm called Journatic, founded in 2006 by Brian Timponi, which counted among its clients and investors such publishers as Hearst Newspapers and the Tribune Company. It was quite the industry darling until 2012, when This American Life revealed just how slimy the news substitute was.
The reporter's name on the story is Ginny Cox. But there is no Ginny Cox. Or even if there is a Ginny Cox somewhere out there, she didn't write this story. The writer was someone named Giselle Bautista in the Philippines, who works for Genatic. Again, looking at the computer system the company uses to manage its stories, it seems that when Giselle worked on this real estate story, there was a button called Select Alias. When she clicked on it, she had a choice. She could either be Ginny Cox or Glenda Smith.
That, says Bengani, was curtains for Genatic, but also the moment when pink slime turned into something far more nefarious.
In 2014-2015, Tim Pawn created a new company called Newsinator, and they started creating a network of local sites in Illinois. This was done in partnership, or at least heavily funded by Dan Proft, who ran a super PAC called Liberty Principles. And Dan Proft has been described as a controversial figure in conservative politics in Illinois. Eventually, what happened with Newsinator was somehow it rebranded to become something called LGIS, or Local Government Information Services.
The main brand nowadays is called Locality Labs, but by any name, she says, it is a pay-for-play operation. Conservative clients paying for propaganda disguised as vetted local reporting. There's a name for that, actually.
I'm the president and you're fake news.
Only this is actual fake news from countless sites whose ownership is intentionally obscured by a confusing array of entities. It is the quintessential shadowy network, which Bengani's internet sleuthing and other reporters who led the reporting has now bathed in unwelcome light.
There are various metadata-y things and websites that you can identify. What other domains are sitting on the same IP address as the Michigan sites? Who else is using the same Google Analytics ID or the Facebook Pixel ID? Who else is sharing the same SSL certificate?
Essentially, Timponi charges his almost entirely right-wing clients to create and publish their made-to-order propaganda dressed up as news, mixed in with some legitimate content, precisely like Laura Walters' story in Peace Data. In other words, a homegrown version of Russia's Internet Research Agency.
The IRA specifically sent people to the United States to study the political sphere in the U.S. and to understand what the pressure points were.
From the HBO documentary Agents of Chaos.
The depth of the content was surprising. Our assumption was that all of this content would be on one side politically, but what they had done very effectively was find a friction point and then try to manipulate people on both sides.
2016 Redux. And again, the con depends on real journalists, some unwittingly, some not, who provide actual reporting as a cover for the scheme. Florida reporter Pat Morris, who, until the Great Recession, had been a staffer at a dozen small market dailies, weeklies, and alt-weeklies, has lately depended on freelance gigs, including a year in the Timponi archipelago.
You know, I was laid off in 2009, so I haven't been in a newsroom since then. But yes, it never occurred to me I would be part of anything like that. Like I said, I read last November's, I guess, the first thing that the Columbia Journalism Review had published. And I wanted to throw up. I really, really wanted to just throw up.
Not just because her stories created a cover for political mischief, but because her readers and her own story subjects were themselves abused in service of lies.
You know, talking to people like at the Urban League in Charleston, farmers who would stop and talk to me from their tractor for an hour while a tariff is killing them, doing all that and trusting me, thinking that they're helping their communities.
But instead, helping the purveyors of not pink but red, made in the USA, political slime.
I mean, you know, you kind of expect the Russians to do stuff to you. But you don't expect, you know, your own country to, you know, people using the mechanisms of your own country and the mechanisms of freedom of the press, which is not a Russian concept, but it's an American concept. I think it's certainly more hurtful, personally, and I think it's more dangerous socially because, you know, Americans, if you're American, you know, you know how to do it. I mean, the Russians, I guess, were masters of social media, but what these guys are doing is using local community news. And that's something that Americans know and trust.
We asked Tim Pony for comment, but he did not respond. So let's return now to the masters, the Russians, and the story of Laura Walters. In the analog cloak and dagger world of espionage, intelligence operatives tend to seek agents who are vulnerable for one reason or another. The slime sites are no different.
I did have a certain vulnerability. I didn't have that protection of being a staff reporter. I also didn't have the certainty of, you know, a weekly or a monthly paycheck. And it's not just being a freelancer, it's being a freelancer within the media environment during COVID, you know, where there aren't a whole lot of jobs going. If anything, there are jobs being slashed. So, of course, that makes you vulnerable. It makes you more likely to, you know, jump on any opportunity that comes your way.
Which is why she and Pat Morris have gone on the record to warn others of the dangers, even if it means exposing the grim irony of failing to do the journalistic due diligence on their employers that they routinely do in their reporting.
The fact that Alice Schultz used a Gmail account and not, you know, a staff account like at peacedata.com, they used AI-generated profile pictures. So these were pictures of people who don't exist and have never existed. And there are ways to pick up on those. Of course, I didn't search, I didn't look into it, but if I had, maybe I would have spotted that. They only wanted to pay via PayPal. You know, they didn't want to use any other form of internet transfer or payment option. And the social media accounts were quite new and quite unpopulated as well. So you'd think that someone who was, you know, very connected working in an NGO space or a media space would probably have had quite an established social media presence, and they didn't. So those were some of the obvious things that jump out to me looking back at it.
But irony-wise, really, that's nothing. Earlier, I promised you a true gobsmacker, and I am about to deliver. Laura Walters wrote exactly one piece for Peace Data. It was a 1,000-word story about a sinister foreign scheme to plant disinformation in her home country. A story Alice Schultz or Vladimir McPutin or whoever the editor really was said was just perfect.
I got this gushing response where they said, we'd all like to thank you, you know, from the bottom of our hearts. It's such a fantastic piece. And then Alice went on to say, it's hard to believe how totalitarian countries like China or Russia are finding their ways to meddle even in the strongest democracies around the globe. And of course, at the time, I thought nothing of that. Now, you know, I look back at that and I just can't help but laugh.
It is to laugh or it is to cry.
Exactly. And I teetered on the edge. I really did.
Don't we all? Don't we all? And democracy right along with us.
Yes, we may teeter and even totter, but we can always rely on the insights from the insiders and farseers of our political press, extrapolating from the pronouncements of our elected officials, even, as Bob observes, when they are wrong, time after time. The fact that they feel so sure is reassuring, right?